Hello, party people, and welcome to another episode of Cast Party, presented by Shays Performing Arts Center. My name is Rita Siriani, and with me today, I have my co-party hosts, Juliana Tracy.
Hello.
And in this corner, Ken Lazuski.
Hello, everyone. It is 85 degrees in Buffalo.
No.
In September.
Happy September 17th. It is a very special day beyond the temperature.
Right.
We have a very special guest who, in many ways, does not need an introduction. We have our presenting partner at Shays Buffalo, our very own Albert Nonchalito.
Hey, well, thank you so much.
Thank you for being here today. Thank you for joining us. You had a really cool press conference earlier today with the producers and creatives and Mayor Scanlon for The Outsiders, which was really cool to see and to just have all of them talk about Buffalo. What is it like having, this is your 10th tech in Buffalo. What has that been like for you?
Well, I like to use the word, I think I use it this morning, really a bit of a celebration.
Yeah.
At so many levels. You know, first of all, to be able to open the national tour of the Tony Award winning musical, The Outsiders, in our own Buffalo, New York, and our glorious Shays Theater is nothing less than extraordinary. But more importantly, for the producers to say, you know what, we trust you. We're going to come there. You're going to take care of our baby. A lot of what you heard me talk about is so very special. And then it starts to manifest itself at every level. The best part for me so far is the dress we had last night, the dress rehearsal.
Yes. That was phenomenal.
And when we had all those kids who otherwise would not have been able to come see the show, we've tech 10 shows, and we've never had a show allow us to bring in that many students or spectators or patrons, and so it was really fabulous. It gets me a little emotional.
Yeah,
Albert, was that the first time like they performed in front of an audience like that?
Yes.
Like, that's got to be important, right? Because you can feel it.
So that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, obviously, their shows are rehearsing and teching at this time. They're across the whole country, and all of them will do a dress.
Yeah.
And this is the first time dress for everyone. Obviously, who doesn't know is that opportunity where the cast gets to perform the entire show with a live audience. And to have those kids there last night who were just interacting with them. There was such a wonderful vibe in the house, and the cast was really getting off on it.
That's what
and
I mean.
Really, it was wonderful. So it was a great moment. Again, the show's been here 4 weeks. The economic impact is fabulous. We can tear that apart, but it was really special, very special.
I gotta say, this group of young actors here, they are the most kind, polite folks.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
They asked us politely where they could find a Celsius the other day. Very nice. Very great cast. Extremely talented. The performance with the students was like, they were screaming, they were crying.
Oh,
it was really, really, really cool. Yeah. It reminds you why you work in the theater.
For many of them, it's probably their first show.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And they're probably as excited as everyone else about what's happening.
Absolutely. So, Albert, I was hoping you could give the folks at home like a quick rundown of what you do for Shays and maybe a little bit of history about how you came to Shays.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Those
are like three different questions.
Before I started working here, I saw your name, but I really didn't.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question.
So let's take the first part of that question.
Yes.
So what we do, my company and my team and I are responsible for programming Broadway series. And our job is to put together a Broadway series every year. And we work in several markets, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, most of upstate New York, Elmira, Binghamton, and some markets in Pennsylvania. We put together a series of Broadway shows. To take a step back, the touring Broadway industry is based, the foundation of the touring Broadway industry is on a subscription model.
Yes.
And that, for everyone, is no differently than selling season tickets for sporting events.
Sure. Right.
So we had to find a way, and this is a whole nother talk another time, but many years ago, when shows toured and there weren't subscriptions, they might not last because you never know how they were going to sell. Mm-hmm. Building subscription series is very important. So anyway, our job is to program the series and book the best shows we can so that we can sell the most season tickets and be as successful as possible, because in the end, our job is to bring shows that take care of the community, bring an art form that people enjoy coming to, and also support of the theater, and generate an economic equation that helps us do a lot of other things.
Right.
So we try very hard to bring the combination of the best of Broadway the very best of the new at Broadway. Mm-hmm. This market loves classics. I don't like the word revivals. One of our other priorities, which is difficult to fulfill sometimes, is to bring a show that brings new audiences.
Yes.
And by new audiences, I don't mean just children. I mean people who might not normally come to the theater.
Yes.
So we work on that combination of putting together a Broadway series, deliver it to our patrons, and that's really our job, negotiating the contracts, managing the marketing, handling the production.
Sure.
But initially, it's the booking.
In my head, when I see you guys with all of the different theaters and all of the different seasons you have to program, do you just have a giant wall where you kind of figure out where each show's going to go? Or how
is
do you
like
guys...
Is seating for everybody's...
Right.
Seating charting everybody,
how
right?
How do you kind of plug in... these programs at so many different venues at once?
Yeah. That's another great question. So all the shows are represented by agents. And what they try to do is to geographically manage where the tours are going to open as they crisscross the country.
Sure.
So that they're not all in one geographic location at the same time, because there's some 30-some shows touring the country.
Right.
And so you want to manage where they are. While we're opening The Outsiders, The Notebook is opening in Cleveland. And another show is opening in Baltimore. They tend to try to open in the Northeast. We have the tax credits in the Northeast, and then they work mm-hmm. their way to Florida and to the West as they get to the winter, and then find their way to the Northeast back in the spring.
Sure.
You notice we don't do many shows in January around here.
Right.
Not
right.
an accident.
Yeah. Right. That's intentional. This is logistics. It's like trucking. Yeah. It's like,
but yeah. we work really hard at programming those series. And working with the agents, and so, and then you know the difficulty is not only trying to find seven or eight weeks, it's also that you want to space them apart. Mm-hmm. You don't want your subscribers to have to come every 2 weeks. You want them to come every 3 or 4 weeks. You want them to be manageable for their lifestyles.
Yeah.
So doing all of that is a puzzle. And for instance, I'm almost done with 26, 27.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. You're almost done with the next one.
Yes. Yeah. And we're starting now to look at the new shows that are opening on Broadway this year, which will be part of the 27-28 season. And, you know, sometimes those shows don't make it out. You know, some of them open and close. Like we've seen what happened this past year on Broadway.
Yeah.
What do you mean don't make it out? They
weren't successful enough not to be disparaging all, but we were all really looking forward to Smash.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And ended up not touring. In fact, Smash was supposed to open here.
No way.
No.
And Outsiders was supposed to open in another city.
Is this a secret?
Smash tour didn't happen, so we made a little flip. But that's how far in advance. I mean, I saw this show in workshop 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
The Outsiders.
Yeah.
And then I went to a second one, and then it was developed out in La Jolla, and then it finally made its way to Broadway. So the process is 4 or 5 years for a show, and so you're following it along the way.
So Broadway first, then the tour.
Yeah.
Always.
Not at the same time.
Sometimes. If you think about The Lion King.
Yeah, I was going to say, now I just
Hamilton,
the Lion King. Yes.
And Aladdin. There are a lot of shows, Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. There's some shows that can continue to run on Broadway and also be able to tour.
Yeah. So kind of going off my first three-part question, when you came to Shays, how did you approach, was it Mr. Fagan who you approached?
Yeah.
How did you approach him? And
I'm not going to mention names, but there was a lovely story, lovely for me. There was Broadway being presented here at Shays all those years ago by local promoters. They were rock and roll promoters, so I'll let you figure out who they were. they weren't selling season tickets, and then they would book a show, and if the show didn't sell tickets, they would cancel it. And then they had a two-week engagement of Cats, and unfortunately, the money was gone.
Wow.
So I got a call from the producers of Cats. I was already in Rochester and Syracuse asking us if we would come up and manage the engagement. And so we did. And I, of course, met Patrick Fagan. And Patrick knew by that time the model that was working around the country for the stabilization and the growth of Broadway touring. And that was the subscription model, although it didn't exist here. Although we had it in all of our other markets, it wasn't going on here in Buffalo, ironically.
Yeah.
So anyway, after Cats, we decided that we would put together a series of Broadway shows and start bringing them to Shays. And my offer was to partner with Chase. And I went to my first board meeting, and there was a gentleman at the meeting and said, well, look, if we partner with you, and if we don't sell enough tickets, are you willing to cancel? I said, no, and I don't want to be your partner. I never saw him again.
Oh, my gosh.
Because cool. I said to them, if you want to build credibility here and trust, we have to book shows, and whether they sell or not, we'll let people know that we're going to be back. And we're going to keep coming back and coming back. So we started with two nights for each show, went to three nights, went to weekends, started with 2,000 subscribers, grew to 4,000 subscribers, went to the weekends, went to 5,000 or 6,000, and now, as you all know, over 17,000 subscribers, one of the best one-week markets in America. But it took a lot of time, and it took a lot of support from the community, but also they had to be willing to trust us and know that every show was going to come no matter what. And so here we are. So that's what Patrick and I did all those years ago, and we built the subscription series. And it was challenging in the beginning. We had shows that didn't sell. You know, Studio Arena was then here, and there was a lot of other competition, and now all of a sudden there's even more theater here now than there ever was before, which is just glorious.
Yeah, good problem.
So I think we helped contribute to that growth of the theater audience as well. And so it's a lovely, great story.
See, like, I never knew the subscriber model. Like, when I think of Shays and the season subscription, I just always think that was here.
Yeah.
Like, it had to be
slowly built,
formulated and created and thought out and intentionally planned that way.
Well, I mean, I do a program for the Broadway League, which is our national trade organization called Rising Stars. And I tell all the young people that we meet with during this program, in order to understand today, you really have to understand yesterday, to your point. And yesterday was Broadway shows touring that had no stability.
Sure.
You know, a producer put a show together, stop in Baltimore, go to Cleveland, go to Omaha, and word would get out that it's not selling, and the other 20 weeks would cancel. Because there wasn't a guarantee system in place, where the producer was basically renting the theaters, and that destroyed the whole industry, the touring industry. In order to make it work, we had to go to some kind of a model that kept us in a place where people would come on a regular basis, and that's how we built it.
So one of my questions for you, just hearing all that, because it's, you know, it sounds like it took, like, a lot of time to build and over the years. As you're looking at the next generations of theatergoers and you're finding us not to be as keen to subscribe, how do producers kind of begin to navigate or talk about that, about getting more folks to the theater who don't want to commit to eight shows?
So I think there are two questions there. I think the first part of it is what we finally refer to as audience development, you know, and trying to find shows that will bring in, like, the outsiders, people who don't normally come to the theater, to develop theater-going habits, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to tell the story, when we bring a Lion King in or Aladdin, you can stand in the lobby, particularly here at Shays, which is so magnificent.
Yeah.
And you know that when they're not here, they've not been here before, because they're like this. Their heads are up.
Yes. Yep.
And they're looking at the ceiling. And, you know, this is their first time here. I think that helps us deliver the theater-going habit, if you will.
Yeah.
But your second half is really a great question. Not that the first half wasn't, but, you know, we understand the demographics of subscribers. Our average age of subscribers is 50s.
Yeah.
50 to 55.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There are people who are in different stages of their lives who can make that kind of a commitment because they're not as busy as young people are, or raising families, or are going to concerts or doing a lot of other things. We understand that we want them to come to shows, and we have tickets for them, not as many as we'd like because we have 17,000 subscribers. But we'll bring a Hamilton back that's not on subscription. Or we'll bring a Book of Mormon that's not on subscription. Or we'll bring a Wicked for 3 or 4 weeks.
Beauty and the Beast, right? So, this time that was...
So you try to find your way to programming additional shows or weeks where you can fulfill those demands for those audiences, like you just asked about, that can't either afford or want to commit to going to a series of Broadway shows. It's no different than sports teams saying, I got 60,000 seats, but I'm only going to sell 45,000 season tickets so I can sell the single tickets to other people.
Yeah.
So I get them to come, and eventually they'll come. So it's a model that people grow into as they get older.
Yeah.
And it so far has worked. Hmm. But we're aware of that by programming and trying to bring in additional time, additional shows, additional weeks.
That's really fascinating. I never really thought
about
it.
It's not an accident.
I knew it was all purposeful, but to hear about, like, I think I assumed that when we do subscriber add-ons, it's because the tour had time and not because you... So this is very enlightening to me.
So if you look at the last several years, and many years at Shays, we're 6 or 7 weeks of Broadway on our season. But we're 11 or 12 weeks of Broadway weeks in the theater with a combination of multiple week engagements and specials. And we work very hard at trying to get those specials in here.
I love the specials.
Yeah.
So I'm always glad. Like, yeah. Jesus Christ Superstar, when you brought it, me and my dad went, and we had the best time ever.
Beauty and the Beast, that was a special?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Oh, Ain't Too Proud was a special, too.
That was my first show I saw in its entirety since I started working here as Ain't Too Proud. I was blown away.
It was phenomenal.
Those guys kicked
it.
They were terrific.
The nice thing about specials is they're usually shows that are still playing on Broadway. I'll name them before, but, you know, Hamilton can come back, and Lincoln can come back, and Book of Mormon can come back, and Lion King can come back. So, you know, they have their branded shows, and I hate that word, but...
Yeah, they have, like,
they have an audience, a following. But it helps you bring in new audiences as well, so...
So, now that, like, when you're looking at these workshops at, like, La Jolla or Paper Mill that are getting ready to hopefully debut into Broadway... What is that spark or thing that convinces you to invest or be a part of that?
I love that question. So, you know, I don't try to pretend that I'm a director or a creative person. You know, I am a theater person. Yeah. I thought I was an actor when I was in eighth grade, but it switched to football, so that ended. But I tell people that when I go to the theater, if my brain or my soul or my heart connect in some way on what's going on stage. Mm. I have some kind of a connection. And if it happens to be that all three connect together, then I'm really in.
You're all in, yeah.
It's an emotional, intellectual, soulful connection that says, I can remember seeing Rent the first time, going to at the Atlantic Theater.
Yeah.
And I was with the agent, and he met me at intermission. He said, "What do you think?" And I said, "I don't know that I've ever worked so hard in the theater in my entire life, watching a show." I mean, because think about Rent at that time. You guys weren't even born. But the delivery of that show was so new.
Yes.
Right. And for someone like me who had been around for a while, I was really working to hear and listen and connect and hear the storytelling. And then after the show, I said to him, "You tell my friend Jeffrey, if he brings this to Broadway, not only is he going to win the Tony Award, he's going to win the Pulitzer Prize."
Oh my God.
And they won both.
I
was fortunate enough to be invited to be part of that show as an investor. So it's one of my lovely stories. Because the same thing happened to me when I went to see the Band's Visit. I mean, you know, sometimes, I manage a portfolio of 40-some performing arts centers around the country who invest in Broadway shows. Mm. And I went to see MJ at a workshop, and I couldn't get any of my colleagues to invest. Hmm. I'm like,
"Wow!
This show killed me. It was unbelievable."
Right.
Besides the story with you, it was an emotional connection for me. So I just said, "Okay, I'll co-produce it."
No way. Oh my God.
So it doesn't happen to me all the time, and I've been wrong, you know, but it's a great, great question, and it's just what you feel, what I feel when I'm in that space. And the nice thing about those situations is that you're in a small group.
Right.
And it's a whole different experience than seeing a full production on a big stage. And sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's harder to know and feel what you think about the show.
Right. I get that because I'm thinking about like Great Comet of 1812, and people really liked how intimate it was, but then they felt like when it got to the Broadway show, it lost its oomph.
Ooh.
Have you ever found that, like where it went from that one place to the other and you didn't have that connection?
I think I get the right to talk about this because I was involved in Dead Outlaw this past year.
I love Dead Outlaw.
Everyone loves that show upstairs.
But where did you see it?
Ariel Shy.
I didn't get to see it, but I've been like, so I heard the buzz from the off-Broadway.
There you go. That's your point of your question.
By the time I made my trip to New York,
I think the lead producers are two great women of the theater, Leah Vallake and Sonia Friedman, who co-produced the show, would say to you, they probably needed to stay downtown. By downtown, I mean off-Broadway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just didn't, it lost its intimacy when it came uptown.
How do you pick off-Broadway, down-Broadway? Is it just you guys all?
Off-Broadway. Off-Broadway. It happens to be a part of town down lower Manhattan, but it also means theaters of X amount of seats, less than 500 seats.
Oh, there's a few off-Broadway theaters on Broadway.
Right.
Yeah.
Broadway is 41 theaters off-Broadway. I don't remember the number right now. But there's smaller theaters, different contractual contracts with the unions, allows you to produce in a different way, smaller stages, development sometimes. Sometimes there's shows that run forever because the intimacy of that setting serves the show so much better.
So off-Broadway doesn't necessarily mean you're literally not on Broadway. You can be on Broadway and still be...
There are no off-Broadway shows. Yes or no.
But your point is that the smaller theaters, and then you move to these big ones, it loses it.
And it happens. Yeah. It happens. Not often, but it happens.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, I could see that. Sure.
I will say the cast recording of Dead Out Loud, which was my experience with it, was phenomenal.
It's fabulous, but and it got nominated for Best Musical, but it's gone, and that's unfortunate. And that's a whole other story. The economics on Broadway right now are very challenging. The costs of mounting a show and operating a show are very expensive, so you have to run.
Wow. So as you're kind of meeting with these young producers at the Broadway League, and as you're talking to us, any possible future producers at home who might be listening, do you have any thoughts about how to get involved or how to start out as a producer?
You know, there's a great book right now written by my dear friend Jeffrey Seller, who's the Tony Award-winning producer of Rent, In the Heights, and Hamilton. It's called Theater Kid.
Theater Kid.
And he talks about his life in the theater and many other parts of his life. But, but you know, what I tell young people is just get in.
Yeah.
Do anything in the theater. Because if you're backstage, if you're in the box office, if you're in the theater, you're going to learn about the business and you're going to find your way. Don't be afraid to take on any role you can. You know, Jeffrey wanted to be a director and end up being a producer and found that directing wasn't what he was really as good at, you know. But I think exposure, finding your way to any kind of theater company you can and learning the business is the best advice I could give. Don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. Don't be afraid to work for free. Don't be afraid to use your voice. Ask a lot of questions. Learn. I think it goes a long way.
Were you a theater kid?
Well, I have to tell you, I think I was. you know, all those years ago, when we had a subscription model, there were Broadway theater leagues around the country, particularly in smaller communities, where they would find a not-for-profit organization, the producers, and get people to sell season tickets. They wouldn't have any risk. They would just sell the season tickets for them. We had a theater where I grew up, and I was in drama club in junior high.
Yes.
And they used us as ushers.
Wow.
And so to this day, and where we still have a theater series in Binghamton, New York, where I grew up, we still use theater students as our ushers.
That's a nice idea.
Because that's how I got in the business.
Sure.
And I was bitten, smitten, figured out what you want. Then I acted in a few plays in junior high, and then the coach got a hold of me, and I tore up my knee playing football. And I always had an affinity for it.
Sure.
I wasn't any good at it, I don't think. But I loved being in the house when the lights went out or the curtain went up. It was just a special moment for me, and still is.
Yeah.
I tell people I'm in the business side of theater, which is where I seem to have found my expertise, if you will.
Yeah, I would say.
So when I say get in, you figure out where what you're going to be. You know. I was telling Christina DiVenzio, who's one of the producers of The Outsiders, about the first show we teched here, which was I think Neverland.
Yes.
Mm. And the lead producer was Barry Weisler, and she said I was his assistant.
No way.
Oh my gosh.
10 years to 11 years ago, she was his assistant in his office. And now she's one of the producers of this. So get in. She was working in an office answering the phone for him.
Oh, my God.
But learning and hearing
everything
that was going on every day about producing, because that's what she wanted to do. And now she's doing it.
Wow, it goes to show that, like, in theater, if you work hard and you show up,
everything pays off. Different than anything else.
Yeah.
But you've got to throw yourself into it and not be afraid to just do anything you can. But something that's going to lead you to where you want to go.
Oh, my gosh. Well, really quick, selfishly, I just have to ask, like, what would you say is the musical or play that made you smitten or, like, get into theater?
Yeah. So, A Chorus Line?
Was it?
Yeah.
I had left college. I was working, running the box office at my university's concert venue and booking all the concerts. And I won't bore you with the whole story, but I had found my way into the venue business right out of college. And I had made friends with some entertainers from a nice show. We all went to New York, and we all went to see Chorus Line.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was over. It was it. I was like, and then 20-some years later, I produced the tour of Chorus Line.
No way. That's so full circle.
Yeah.
Full circle.
I mean, think about it. I was selling tickets. I was managing a venue, hiring ushers, you know, box office security. And then went to see the show, played the album every Sunday morning.
Yes.
Until I wore it out and knew every song. And then when it closed on Broadway, I saw the cast on the Phil Donahue show. I was 37 years old. And I said, I want to do that tour. And I got the rights with another friend, and we got Visa to sponsor us, and we did the farewell tour of A Chorus Line.
Oh my gosh.
And that was in 1992.
Wow.
That's how long ago. There is no question that show, for me, was a signature moment in my life in the theater.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I love that you went on to do the tour after
Who knew that was going to happen 20 years later?
Just call your buddy up. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
I love this. I love that. Yeah. I was actually at the press conference today, and I think I whispered to Cassandra and Juliana, I'm like, I want to build something like this. You guys just, like, the whole family thing. I want to build a building here, obviously, but, like, you're building something when you put this tech. They're building this family. Then they talked about the family gets bigger as more people start to show up. Then the cash shows up, and then you have the dress, and then tonight, the whole damn thing comes together in a full packed house.
That's great. It's one of the things about producing a show is you do become a family. You know, you have 41 theaters on Broadway, and not one show has anything to do with the other show.
That's right. Yeah.
They're all their own little entity into themselves, and their own family, and their own leaders, and their own mechanics, and you pick a name and apply it to a different industry, and then apply it back to the theater. It's the same thing. Whether you're the general manager, whether you're the head carpenter, whether you're the stage manager, you create this entity or this family that exists to take this show and move it around, and then it goes away. But you live together for a very long time, taking care of it. So,
I think that's what I always appreciate about theater the most is that you build something and it's there, and then the next day it's gone. And, like, the temperance of art and the fact that we create something so big that is temporary, I think, is really special.
It may be physically gone, but it exists in many other ways.
Yes, that's a good point.
First of all, it's in your mind. It's your memory. It's in your experience. And you'll take it with you to whatever else you're doing.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, my Chorus Line. I can still remember the first day that I saw that show on Broadway.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Like it was yesterday, and it wasn't yesterday.
1992. Or no,
92. Oh, no.
It was the tour. Chorus Line.
Oh, God.
Did you see it at the Public then?
The Chorus Line?
Yeah.
No, that was much after that.
Oh, okay.
Not that young.
I was like, whoa.
37. I remember 37.
Yeah.
No, but I did see Hamilton at the Public.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, that was so cool.
Yeah. But those are great memories. They're great memories. So.
Well, Albert, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day while you're here with the Outsiders.
Thank you so much.
We've been so excited to have you on, and
thank
I know
you.
That everyone who's going to see the Outsiders is going to have really special memories.
Yeah, it's going to be a wonderful show. And we'll see a lot of new people here. A lot of new audiences, particularly young people.
Our intern, who came back, she loved it so much here, she cried at the season announcement. Remember you said the Outsiders and you high-fived the guy?
Yeah.
She was crying when you announced the Outsiders.
Yeah. I didn't have a reaction.
I really didn't know much about it. And she was...
Yeah, I mean,
please.
That moment, that crazy moment at the season announcement, I was trying to tell the story today, but I wasn't expecting it. And neither was my friend Matthew Rigo, who's the lead producer.
He seems like a wonderful guy.
And we kind of choreographed how I was going to do it, so I didn't say it so he could say it. And they roared. And he stood back and he looked at me like,
high-fiving
each other. Because we were not expecting it. And that was a beautiful moment because they had just won the Tony Award. Nobody really knows, you know.
Right.
You don't know whether it's going to resonate. You don't know whether people even are paying attention to it. Of course, with The Outsiders, it has a whole different level of awareness.
Yes.
Because of the book. And so many young people have read the book over the course of the last 20 years particularly. But we just didn't expect it to...
To
go
take
like,
off.
No, that was huge. And it was fun. It was fun.
But that's the best part when you're doing something fun and you're kicking butt. I mean, it's
because, great. You know, when you put together a season and you announce it, particularly to those people who come for our announcement event, you never know.
Yes, how they're going to react. Yes.
Are they going to know the show? Are they, you know, they trust us. That's the wonderful part, what has happened.
Yes.
We have delivered and they've helped us with credibility, but. And we're going to bring the best we can, but we don't know if they're going to know it or not.
Just as a testament, like, I think The Outsiders has such, like, a... Like, you said, bringing in, like, the younger generations. I think a whole... Like you said, the whole group of young people. I've never seen so many teenagers in a theater. Like, I've walked by... When I go to New York, I've walked by that theater, and the stage door is just filled with a bunch of young kids.
You're right.
Excited to see the cast and see, like... So
it's
so exciting to have... that here, and I think that's why our intern Bailey had that reaction,
because she's
of that demographic where she's like, she wants to see the people her age on stage.
Great.
You know, we're able to reach young people in a different way than we have before because of social media, obviously, and the exposure they get. But I tell this one more quick story.
Please.
Of course.
I was speaking to a group of students in Rochester that the theater, the teacher who handles the theater program, they were all students who were not actors, who worked backstage and wanted, were interested in other parts of theater than acting. So we were just talking like this about shows, and I asked them if any of them heard of Hamilton, and they said, they all put their hands up. And I said, do any of you know the score or the music? And they all put their hands up. And I said, have any of you seen the show? And nobody put their hands up. And I said, you know, this was before my time, but there was a time in America where mainstream music from the radio was Broadway shows.
Yes.
In the 50s. And when South Pacific and Sound of Music and West Side Story and MAME, and they played that kind of music on the radio. So people knew about Broadway shows by listening to the radio. Well, fast forward 50 years later or 60 years later, whatever it is, and these young people know about these shows no differently than The Outsiders, in a different way, and which is wonderful. Now, getting to the theaters is another thing. We all work very hard at creating opportunities for young people. In New York City, we have a program called Broadway Bridges, where students come for $10 and it's subsidized. Many markets have programs where they raise money so the kids can come for a much lesser ticket price. And we have a responsibility to continue those efforts.
So. Nice. That's really, that's amazing. It's so great that you guys are able to create those programming to get folks in and get young people in. And if you are listening and you are a young thespian, we have a great education program. We have a wonderful theater and we invite you in. Albert, thank you again so, so very much. I'm so excited about this episode. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're the coolest and we appreciate it.
I'm so proud of all of you for doing this. This is fabulous.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks. So I'm going to do some quick campus shout-outs, which is, by the time you hear this, it'll be almost October. Ah! So starring Buffalo's Young Frankenstein will be in concert. It's coming to Shea 710, October 2nd through the 4th. I love this musical. You will, too. Check it out. And then, of course, we have The Notebook as part of our five-star bank season at Shea's Buffalo. That is October 7th through the 12th. Get your Nicholas Sparks movie. Get your book. Get your girls. Go out. Have a nice time.
We have a book club here, right?
That's right.
We have a Shea's book club.
That's right. We have a Shea's book club, so also check that out. Get your reading on, folks. This is the season for it. Thank you guys for joining us at Cast Party. We hope you enjoyed the vibes, got some exciting tea, and we will see you at rehearsal. Until then, Ken, why don't you play us out?
Thank you so much.
He genuinely doesn't play the piano. I don't know what he...
Cast Party is presented by Shea's Performing Arts Center.
Produced by Cassandra Lippert, Ken Lazuski, myself, Juliana Tracy, and Rita Siriani.
Theme song by John Michael Ogletree.
Audio mixing by Dave Lenhart.
Logo and graphics designed by Acacia Crozier.
Marketing and social media by Bridget Neeson.
Please rate, review, and subscribe to Shea's Performing Arts Center Presents Cast Party, wherever exceptional podcasts are downloaded.
Or visit us at shays.org.
Bye-bye.